Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back for another exciting hour of Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest. Why do you reject Catholic morality is the question we have for you this hour. 888-318-7884. The number Catholic morality covers, well, just about everything, I guess. So if maybe some particular aspect of it bothers you, something that the Catholic Church teaches about how you should spend your money or not spend your money, or something about how what the Catholic Church says armies can do or can't do is in war, or maybe the, well, we've spoken about the death penalty. We've spoken about some sexual issues thus far. Anything that you reject about Catholic morality is fair game today. Or maybe you just reject the whole thing, whole kit and caboodle of Catholic morality. 888-318-7884. Our number, Catholic Answers staff apologist Trent Horn is here with us for this hour, as he was for last. And I will just remind you, he is the author of a whole bunch of books now, including Answering Atheism, Persuasive Pro-Life, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties, and Why We're Catholic. And we will add to that list the brand new The Case for Catholicism, just out for Trent Horn. Congratulations, Trent.
Thank you very much.
888-31-TRUTH, the number, there's one line open. So that's for you. Right now you're thinking, should I call? Should I call? Yes, you should. You should call and share with us why you reject Catholic morality. Let's start this hour with Jason in Connecticut. Jason, you are on with Trent Horn. Your question, please.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. Actually, I originally had one question. I have another question now. It's on Pope Francis and a lot of the statements that he makes. And I'm having a hard time apologizing sort of the idea that, you know, he's our pastor and we're supposed to look to him for leadership. And then he makes a lot of what appear to be very, very sloppy statements and opining on things that don't really – aren't necessarily Catholic, Orthodox Catholic teachings, and then kind of throwing a disclaimer out there saying, I'm not changing anything. But it's kind of like saying, with all due respect, you're the worst person in the world, right? It doesn't really work that way.
With all due respect, Jason, fair enough. Okay, so but your point for Trent is it a question about the Pope, or is there some particular teaching?
Yeah, I mean, the question is,
What do we do?
How do we? Yeah, what do we do if it looks like he's teaching things that aren't really Orthodox teachings?
Fair enough. There's a question for you, Trent.
Yeah, and I think the first absolute thing that we should do is we should pray for the Pope and pray for the bishops and the priests, but pray for him in particular for his role as the pastor of Christ's Church. That, I mean, if you think about it, God never promised that he would give us perfect priests, perfect bishops, or a perfect pope. I mean, as Pope, Pope Francis is the successor of St. Peter, and St. Peter made a lot of mistakes, both before the crucifixion and resurrection and after. I mean, you think about it, in Galatians chapter 2, St. Paul rebuked Peter for acting in a hypocritical way towards the Gentiles. That's in Galatians 2:14. But that did not take away from Peter's authority as a leader in the early church. In fact, St. Paul, the fact that he was willing to correct Peter about his conduct and speak to him in this way was showing that, hey, look, this is an important way we should behave and understand the gospel, so much so that even the person who has the highest authority in the church, someone like Peter, has to be corrected on this when necessary. So I think we should not be dismayed if the leaders, the pastors of our church, act in erroneous ways, either make bad decisions or even speak inaccurately. So ultimately, we have to pray for them so that they won't fall into these mistakes. And if they do, we pray that they are willing to be charitably corrected. There have been, for example, in the past, I think it was Pope John the 22nd, I believe, who was in error about the beatific vision, and he was corrected. He made errors in his homilies, but he was corrected by his fellow bishops, and he admitted his error before he died. So pray for the Pope and pray for his other brother bishops to be able to correct him in a filial way when necessary. So I think that's just what we have to do, to be honest and understand that the pastor of the church will not infallibly define and lead us into error, but he may make other missteps. And so we have to be patient and pray for him if that were to occur. So what do you think of that as a starter?
I think that's a great answer. I guess my follow-up question is it okay to be skeptical of everything that he says when he, you know, when he says so many problematic things, especially if you're like a political conservative, right? And he's opining on things like gun control and, you know, capitalism is bad and you know, immigration and death penalty and all that kind of stuff, right?
Well, there I would just take the advice of another recent pontiff, Pope Benedict XVI, who said that Catholics can reasonably disagree among each other or even with the Pope on non-essential issues like the ones that you've described, whereas on essential issues like abortion or euthanasia or religious liberty, they cannot. So I think that when the Pope speaks, we should give him a hearing that we do not give to other people. It's kind of like when you're at home. I mean, when you're a kid and dad speaks, you know, he's not some kind of infallible dictator, but you don't treat him like you do your other friends at school. He has a certain authority, and you should listen to that, but he should be willing to be corrected if he's in error on something. So when we listen to the Pope, we should give him that deference and respect for his office, being that he is given the monumental task, being the successor of Peter, the pastor of the entire church, and God has given him charisms and graces to be able to do that, to keep him from infallibly defining error. So we should be charitable then when we hear the Pope and not treat him as, oh, the Pope again, and, you know, be very uncharitable in reading him. We should try to always act with charity and deference to his office, but while understanding that he can make missteps when he speaks and to pray that he doesn't.
Thank you very much, Jason, for that call. Let's try to get another call in before we go to the break, because there's lots of folks who want to tell us about why they reject Catholic morality, and we are so happy to have that conversation this hour. Trent Horn is our guest. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. And we go now to Adriana in Waco, Texas. Adriana, your comments or question for Trent Horn.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Okay, so I agree completely with the Catholic beliefs. I'm a convert from the Protestant church. But my thing that I'm asking about is I'm going to start working at CareNet probably pretty soon here.
The Pregnancy Resource Center?
Correct.
CareNet? Okay.
Yes. And I want to uphold my Catholic belief of not using contraceptives, only like natural family planning. But I don't really know how to go about that and then be okay with me working there.
Is CareNet involved with prescribing or referring its clients for contraception?
I don't think they prescribe it, but I think they do refer for contraception. I'm not sure. I'm supposed to go talk with them here pretty soon this week about the job situation. But
go ahead.
I have a social work degree, and as a social worker, ethically, I'm supposed to, like, offer all sides of the issue, but I'd rather uphold my Christian beliefs, my Catholic Christian beliefs, than the ethical standards of a social worker. I just don't get a job that would cause me to do that. Does that make sense?
Yes, it certainly does, and so first and foremost, your obligation would be to uphold the teachings of the church and not formally cooperate with the sin of contraception. That would include using it, but also, for example, prescribing it or selling it if it's intended to be used as a contraceptive. Now, there could be cases where a physician might prescribe hormonal contraception to a teenager who's not sexually active to deal with acne or you know, other kinds of issues to regulate with that those hormones. But to prescribe with the intent of being used as a contraception would involve a formal cooperation with evil, which you should refrain from. So what should you do in your case? First, I would say there is nothing wrong with you as a social worker if you're meeting with a client, for example. Let's say you didn't work at CareNet, you work for the state, you're on a social visit, or you have a client come to visit you, and you have to just inform them about contraception. You say, well, here is where contraception is available, here is what it is, the methods, here's how well they work. There's nothing wrong with you just providing information to people. And what's great is you can provide them all sides, because many people who provide contraception or tell about it won't say, for example, that the birth control pill is a class one carcinogen, according to the World Health Organization. So providing information, just strict information, is not wrong. Say, hey, I'm here, here's all the information, and you decide what to do with it. Now, if it came with saying, I'm going to write you a referral to this doctor who will get you contraceptives, I would say that starts to stray into the area of formal cooperation. So what you could do, let's say you're at CareNet, you could say to them, well, my religious beliefs prohibit me from cooperating with contraception, so I'm happy to educate clients on all their options, but making any kind of formal referral, could I please ask another employee to meet with a client to do a formal referral? And I think that's a reasonable accommodation they could make, because you're able to fulfill all of your major duties, just this one thing could be handled by someone else. So is that a helpful path to maybe go down?
Yeah, that's very helpful, because I just didn't really know how to approach the situation.
Yeah, so you can tell them, look, I'm fine telling people all the facts about contraception, about abortion. Here are the facts about these things. Here is where, you know, they are available here in the city where we live. You can go search for them online. So that you can say, I can provide counseling and facts, but to start the process of using a contraceptive, such as by giving a referral, that is something I couldn't do, and I hope we could reasonably accommodate that so I could serve your mission. And if they're not reasonable for that, I would hope in your area there is a Catholic pregnancy resource center that shares your values that maybe you could look into also.
Adriana, thank you very, very much for that call. Our topic this hour, why do you reject Catholic morality? Lots of folks on the line, but lines still open, 888-318-7884. We'll get to that with Trent Horn right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Your number one source for Catholic apologetics and evangelization, Catholic Answers Live.
It's October, and as we head to the end of the year, Catholic Answers is kicking off its annual winter sale in its newly redesigned online shop, with great discounts on all of the books, DVDs, CDs, ebooks, and MP3s that we carry. With great new releases on church history, scripture, Bible prophecy, and the saints, the shop at Catholic.com is once again your go-to place for solid Catholic resources, with a store-wide discount to boot. Just enter the promo code WINTER at checkout and you'll save 20% off your total purchase. That's right, 20% off the hundreds of great Catholic resources we have in our online store from now till the end of the year. To get those discounts, just go to shop.catholic.com. That's shop.catholic.com.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking book by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can give to anyone as a starting point for helping them to find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why do you reject Catholic morality? That is our harsh-sounding question to you, but we will try not to have a harsh conversation with you. There must be – well, I shouldn't say there must be, but perhaps there is some aspect of Catholic morality that you reject having to do with money or sexuality or power or all those areas where we have moral teachings. Or maybe you don't like the whole thing. You just don't like the whole edifice of Catholic moral teaching. We're happy to take your call. We'd love to engage in a conversation with you. 888-318-7884 is the number. Trent Horn is our guest. And we now go to Dave in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on EWTN. Dave, why do you reject Catholic morality?
Well, I don't, and I don't know if this is applicable to the show, but I am a Catholic, and I'm a convert. The thing I struggle with as a practicing Catholic is I don't struggle with it because I do believe it, but I am concerned about it, is the no salvation outside the Catholic faith. I believe it. I think that people who are not Catholics, they're not getting the fullness of being a true Christian, the full grace. But I worry about my parents are Lutherans. I have friends that are Protestants. And, I'm concerned about, are those people going to hell if they don't convert to Catholicism? So that's my question.
Sure. And what I would say to that is that the teaching of no salvation outside of the church means that the instrument God has given humanity to be saved are the sacraments that are within the Catholic Church. So the Church is the objective means by which people are saved. There is no other way that objectively saves people. So you won't get to heaven and find somebody there. You say, oh, you know, you're Catholic. Are you also Catholic? You say, oh, well, it turns out you could be baptized, or you can also be freed from sin solely by meditation through Buddhism, for example. And if you just meditate hard enough, you will be freed from sin and you can go to heaven. No, that doesn't work. However, just because the church is the only objective way that we are saved, I'll put it this way. We are saved objectively by God's grace. And God, the only objective means God has given the world to recognize, to receive his grace, is through the sacraments of the church. However, God is not bound by the sacraments. God, I think that's paragraph 1257. You have to look that one up, see if I get that right. That's in the catechism says specifically that God is not bound by the sacraments. So he can give his grace to whoever he wants to. 1 Timothy 2:4 is very clear. God desires the salvation of all men or all people. So even if there's someone who has never heard of the Catholic Church, God can give that person grace. And maybe let's say they are a Buddhist, for example, never heard of Catholicism. If they were to be in heaven, it would not be the tenets of Buddhism that saved them. It would be the grace God gave them that they responded to, maybe without even knowing it. So when the church says there's no, when the church teaches there's no salvation outside of the church, historically, what that meant in church documents were that heretics or people who knew the church is the objective means of salvation, there is no salvation outside of the church for them. They know the way to be saved and they've turned their backs on it. That it is not historically applied just to people who've never heard about the church or people who've heard about the Catholic Church but were never convinced or were invincibly ignorant that they just don't know that it is the means God has given us. They're mistaken in some form. So you can go to our website, Catholic.com, and search for that. We have a lot of articles on it. And a full-length treatment of it can be found in the book Salvation Outside the Church by Francis A. Sullivan. So, Dave, is that a helpful reply?
Yeah, it is. It certainly is. And I mean, obviously, I have probably four or five questions that build on that. But that's the core of the concern. I appreciate the answer, and I'll look it up on the website. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you very much, Dave. Why do you reject Catholic morality? Our topic this hour with Trent Horn. Trent, we go now to Chris in Toledo, Ohio. Chris, why do you reject Catholic morality?
Yes. My question has to do with annulment. I was married 19 years ago, and in the wedding ceremony, it was read, let no man divide what God has joined. And, roughly 3 years ago, let's say through a midlife crisis, my wife had left, and we have a civil divorce now. But how does the Catholic Church view that? Because I'm having a hard time thinking through the annulment process because religiously, I'm, still supposed to be married, but I'm not. So, that's the question I have, is how does the Church justify an annulment?
Yeah. So the Church justifies an annulment by saying that there may be cases where it appeared two people were married, but a certain condition was not met for the two people to have a valid marriage. So unlike divorce, when people question about whether or not to get a divorce, they usually focus on what happened at the end of the marriage, like the conflicts that brought about the end of the marriage. Annulments are not about how the marriage ended. Annulments are about how the marriage began. Were there the requirements for people to be married? Or was there an impediment? So, for example, if a woman marries a man, but it turns out he's got a wife in another town, they don't have to get a divorce. They might get a civil divorce for legal purposes, but the Church would never recognize that that was a real marriage. The man was not free to marry that woman because he was already married to another woman. And there's lots of impediments like this. A child can't validly marry someone under the age of 14 or 16, depending on their gender. You can't validly marry a relative. Or even if you can't be validly married if on the day of the marriage you were coerced or you were psychologically unstable. You couldn't freely say yes because marriage requires a free vow that's made. So annulments recognize that one of the valid conditions that you have to be able to be free to marry, follow the proper form of the marriage. If one of those things is not followed, the marriage would be considered invalid and thus declared null. So that's annulments in a nutshell. In the case of your marriage, Chris, and I'm very sorry to hear that your marriage after 19 years ended in this way. If you suspect that it was not valid or if something was missing, you and your ex-wife might pursue the process of an annulment. Are you both Catholic?
Yes.
Were you both married in the Church?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that, and I can't really get into too much detail about, walking through what happened with your marriage and looking at it. But it's possible it may not have been valid to begin with, but it's also possible you had a valid marriage and you said that your wife ended the marriage?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And so it's also possible you are validly married, but you have essentially been abandoned by your spouse and you have been hurt and a grave injustice was committed against you that through prayer, no matter what the process that's involved, a lot of prayer will be needed in order to bear the weight of this harm that's been done to you and to not dwell on hurtful or hateful thoughts about marriage or towards your spouse. So I think in this situation that our listeners, I'll ask them to pray for you and your spouse and for you to pray for the strength and to pray for your wife, who, while she's your ex-wife civilly, the church would still presume you're married unless through an annulment process it was discovered the marriage is invalid. And if you'd like to learn more about that, I'd recommend you contact your local diocese, the marriage office at your local diocese, or the tribunal at your diocese, and they can give you more information on the annulment process. So is that helpful?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much, Chris, for that call. Why do you reject Catholic morality is the question of the hour this hour. Trent Horn, our guest. Trent, the author of Why We're Catholic, in the brand new publication from Ignatius Press, The Case for Catholicism.
The Case for Catholicism.
Took me a second, but I got it. The Case for
Catholicism. You remember the subtitle?
Yes, I'll do that when we come back on the other side of the break, though. I just feel like we don't have time. If we had time, I would. But does this feel like I'm stretching this out at all? Does this have the?
I think you're hoping for the break to break.
Could this minute end now? Yeah, I'll have that. I'll get it off the top of my head when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Every question is important. Ask yours today on Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As the legend goes, the Protestant Reformation began when Martin Luther nailed a list of his grievances with the Catholic Church to the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. But do you know the whole story? In Catholic Answers' brand new documentary, The Protestant Revolution, you will hear from top apologists Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carla Broussard, Trent Horn, and Steve Weidenkopf as they expose the errors of Martin Luther and of the other so-called reformers. This DVD will give you a clearer understanding of our Protestant brothers and sisters, and you will be better equipped to engage them about what separates us and about what unites us. Order your copy of The Protestant Revolution today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting shop.catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
The best way to practice not really being able to fully celebrate in other people's successes is to go to what you're grateful for in your own life. So when someone next to you is having a great success, you immediately go to, Lord, I'm so grateful. I have my health. Well, I have my husband. I'm grateful. I have a roof over my head. And all of a sudden, everything becomes just perfect.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Right now, at this very moment, we are giving away a free recording of Jimmy Akin's talk, What the Reformation Was All About. For everyone who signs up for the Radio Club, you just go to catholic.com/radio club and you sign up. And then we send you a weekly email of cool stuff after that because you're a member of the Radio Club. And you also get this free download of Jimmy Akin's talk, What the Reformation Was All About. Join us there at catholic.com/radio club. And more recordings usually come every month or so, and we'll send those to you as well, catholic.com/radio club. This hour, we're talking about rejecting Catholic morality. Which Catholic moral teaching do you reject? Is there one that you have a particular problem with? We'd be happy to talk with you about it. We go Trent Horn, I should say, is our guest, and the subtitle to his book, The Case for Catholicism, is Okay. Come on. Sorry. I had a whole break to look it up, and I forgot to look it up.
I'll spot you. I'll spot you.
All right. Help me out this time.
Answers to classic and contemporary
problems.
Protestant objections.
Objections to Catholic. Yeah, that's it.
I think you got one syllable, but yeah.
I didn't
so it's the case.
Go ahead.
The Case for Catholicism, Answers to Classic and Contemporary Protestant Objections, published by Ignatius Press. And with this month being the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation, this book stands to be the most comprehensive and up-to-date treatment of what divides Catholics and Protestants. I'm really excited to have a book like this to recommend to other people. And so now we do have this, and it's been endorsed by lots of different people, including my fellow Catholic Answers colleagues, like Jimmy Akin, for example. And Carl Keating actually gave the book a very nice endorsement. He kind of considers it a worthy heir to his book, Catholicism and Fundamentalism. And I'm just so happy that we have something like this, to have like that one deep single volume treatment of the differences between Catholics and Protestants with the most up-to-date scholarship available. So if you're interested in that, you can go to an online book retailer or at Ignatius Press. And if you want, though, now this book is a hefty, heavy-duty book, I will warn you, but it's rigorous is the way I would describe it. If you want a beginner's treatment of some of these issues, that's why I wrote my book, Why We're Catholic. It's sort of the beginner's guide to many of these issues. Case for Catholicism, we go into the deep end of the pool.
The Case for Catholicism from Trent Horn, the latest book that out from Trent. They seem to be coming out quite regularly now. That's from Ignatius Press. Before we go to calls, Trent, okay, so Carl Keating endorsed your book. Do you think he would remember the subtitle to it? Like if I called Carl right now and said, what's the subtitle to Trent's book, would he remember it?
Carl's memory is a very scary thing.
That's
so,
true. I forgot that. Right. And I know Jimmy would remember it. All right, I got to start memorizing your subtitles.
I wouldn't attempt that. So.
Trent Horn is our guest. Which Catholic moral teaching do you reject? 888-318-7884. We go now to Anonymous, listening from an anonymous location. Anonymous, what do you reject about Catholic moral teaching?
Hi, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Hello.
Hi. I just recently discovered this station, and I can tell you that this is the best thing ever that happened when I go to church on Saturday and someone says there is a Catholic radio, you know, 24/7. So anyways, I'm a proud Catholic and a very faithful one, but I don't know if this subject is relate to your topic today.
Okay.
But I have a question on IVF. It's shortened for in vitro fertilization. I know that the Jewish doesn't allow, you know, the procedure. But, you know, when people wanted kids so bad and they couldn't have it the natural way, the only way for them to have kids is to go through in vitro.
Fair enough.
What is your thought on it?
Trent, in vitro fertilization.
Sure. And for our listeners who may not be aware, in vitro fertilization is to, in comparison to in vivo fertilization, in vitro means to be fertilized outside of a mother's body. In vivo would be inside the body. In vitro is outside. So in vitro fertilization, or IVF, occurs when human egg and sperm are taken out of a man and woman's body and they are fertilized, and the new human being comes into existence in a petri dish in a laboratory. And then they are implanted back into the mother's body for pregnancy, and then the mother gives birth to them. Why is the church against this? Let me offer some reasons. Number one, a child is not something we have a right to. A child is a gift God chooses to give us. That while we have the power to bring human life into the world, ultimately God decides if we are able to do that. It's called it's procreation, creating along with God. And so God blesses us with children sometimes, but sometimes he doesn't. And the Bible is full of stories of people who battled with infertility. And it's certainly, it's a very difficult thing to endure. But once again, children are not something we have a right to. They're not saying, say, I want a child badly. I need a child. I'm going to do what it takes. Because that's looking at it as where the child exists to fulfill a need I have, rather than I am here to fulfill the needs of the child. And so the IVF process reduces children to a commodity that we pay for, that are manufactured in a laboratory by strangers, when they should come into existence by the free gift of self between a husband and wife and the marital act. Children have a right to come into existence in their mother's body and not be the result of a commercial process in a laboratory. So that would be the primary reason that, well, the church teaches that the marital act, sex, marriage has two ends, unitive and procreative. Throughout the show, we've been talking about contraception, and that allows people to have the unitive end without the procreative end of sexuality, so it separates them. IVF is the reverse of that. IVF lets us have the procreative end without the unitive end, so it separates and distorts our sexuality. And finally, from a practical purpose, IVF often involves the creation of many human embryos and more than one. And so this child's brothers and sisters are often destroyed in the lab, or they are aborted in this process. So the process often involves the killing of human beings in order to bring a human being fully to term. So Anonymous, that would be my condensed treatment of that. What do you think of that?
Well, I know that it's it's my personal case, and I get very emotional because
Oh, I only have my hat.
Hang on there. Do we lose Anonymous, or are you with us? And are you okay, Anonymous?
I think Anonymous had a more pressing caller on her on the quote unquote other line. Hello.
That's fine. We can maybe come back to follow up.
Briefly what I heard, sounded as if it, perhaps another Anonymous's children required attention, which is fine because. A child's needs come first before our own needs.
Wow.
See what I did there.
Well, I see what you did there. Nicely done, Trent.
So that is the essence of the church's teachings on IVF. It's interesting when people talk about this subject, they'll say, well, look, this is the only way for this couple to have a child. But imagine you had a rich couple in, you know, the 17th century who are infertile. And, you know, they say, you know, we want a child of our own. We'll never have a child. And there's no babies to adopt in their village. So they just send out one of their knights or courtiers just to go and pluck one of the children from one of these homes in the middle of the night and nobody knows. And then good, now we finally have a baby of our own. It's the only way. We'd say, well, no, you can't do that just because it's the only way you can have a child. In that case, it doesn't give you the right to kidnap someone else's child. Once again, when we come up with all of these moral issues, there's kind of a similar thread when people object to Catholic teaching. It's, look, there's only one option for me to get what I want, and so I need this. And the church would say, well, perhaps the thing we should reconsider is the thing that you want. Maybe that's what we should give up instead of embracing this one option that we think that we need. Because if we look at it as, what can I do to have my needs met, that's going to lead us to ruin, because sin is in the business of trying to meet our desires and wants. Rather, to truly meet our needs, we should ask, what can I do to truly love myself and love others? If I do good, I mean, love is willing the good for another. So if I do good and refrain from evil, my needs will be met, and the needs of others will be met, because needs involve receiving particular goods, because our wants, that can lead us to ruin if we just try to satisfy those by doing whatever it takes. I think it's better, let's just try to do what's good and love others, and the needs will be filled in their own time, and God will help us to meet those basic human needs we have.
Anonymous, are you with us now?
Yes.
And was that acceptable to you?
Yes and no. So then what is adoption then? Adoption is in a way is the same thing, because you know, you want something, right? You want a kid, you adopt a kid. So is that the same thing?
Right. Now let me qualify what I've said. It's not always wrong to satisfy a want and also someone else's need. For example, the baker needs to make money to feed his family, and I want a chocolate cake. I don't need it, but it's okay because in buying the chocolate cake from him, I don't unnecessarily harm myself, and the baker's needs are met, and he makes money and feeds his family. So in following our wants, as long as they are subordinate to a good end, and they're not an evil want, or we don't want something that's bad, then it's okay. So, for example, take adoption of a child who's born. The child needs a loving family. Now, I'll agree adoption is wrong if you look at it solely, this child is coming into the family so I can be happy. That would be a bad reason to adopt a child. But if you look at it as, I want to make this child happy, and I'm thrilled that it's going to make me happy in the process, that's okay. That's okay. And when you look at adoption to meet that child's needs and your wants are fulfilled along the way, that's okay. But in IVF, you don't have an existing child whose needs you're trying to meet. You create a child who needed to come into existence in his mother's body. He had a right to come into existence in his mother's body, not in a laboratory, and not be one of the survivors of his brothers and sisters who were aborted so he could be implanted through IVF. IVF is the case of following wants to something that's bad to meet one of our own needs in a, you know, to the need to quote unquote have a child and the need to feel love in a negative way. So something to consider. And Anonymous, I hope you'll think about that. And for our listeners who have more questions on this, I'd recommend the National Catholic Bioethics Center and their articles on the subject. Their website is ncbcenter.org.
Anonymous, thank you so much for being so patient with us and spending the time with us. Appreciate the question. I would just like to add this because on a personal note, don't be afraid of adopting children. One of my three is an adopted child, and it works out. You just fall in love with them. So don't be afraid of adoption. It'll make you really happy. Probably. I mean, I don't know. You won't get the daughter I got because she's already taken, but you'll probably still get a good kid. 888-318-7884 is the number. We'll be right back with more Trent Horn and your objections to Catholic morality right after this.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett from Catholic Answers Live. It's October, and as we head down the stretch toward the end of the year, Catholic Answers is kicking off the annual winter sale in their online shop with great discounts on all of the books, DVDs, CDs, ebooks, and MP3s we carry. With great new releases on church history, scripture, Bible prophecy, and the saints, the shop at Catholic.com is once again your go-to place for solid Catholic resources with a store-wide discount in addition. Just enter the promo code WINTER at checkout in our newly redesigned shop and you'll save 20% off your total purchase. That's right, 20% off hundreds of great Catholic books, DVDs, CDs, ebooks, and MP3s from now until the end of the year. That's shop.catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 11:29, Jesus told the people that though their evil generation sought a sign, it would receive only the sign of Jonah. He noted that at the preaching of Jonah, the Ninevites repented. But there was something, meaning himself, greater than Jonah in their midst. But they were blind to him. While the Ninevites sinned, they repented because they were humbled. But these people were not humbled and saw no reason to repent. That's the way it is with pride. It turns people completely into themselves. How do we know that we are not filled with pride? Attempting to measure our humility only focuses us on ourselves all the more. But checking on how grateful we are turns our attention to the giver. Nothing humbles us more than recognizing the gift of our existence, and even more the gift of the Savior's blood that was shed for us. At such moments, we know that something greater than Jonah is in our midst. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest this hour, and it's your opportunity to tell us if you have any problems with Catholic morality. 888-318-7884 is the number. We go now to Christopher in Richmond Hill, Ontario, Canada. Christopher, do you have a problem with Catholic morality?
Okay, so first of all, I just want to say, Trent, I'm a big fan, and your debates with about atheism and your, you know, videos that you've done have really, really helped me a lot. So I just wanted to say thank you for all that to start off.
Thank you.
Thank
you very much.
So, thank you. So my question is, I don't necessarily reject Catholic morality, but something that I've been kind of struggling with in my heart is the idea of chastity in marriage, right? Especially when waiting, abstaining and everything, the idea of continuing, chastity into marital life. And I was just wondering if there's anything, right, you know, any advice you could give and any maybe words that, you know, would be helpful.
Sure. I mean, if there's something specific you're wondering about, that would help me, but I could give some general advice first.
Just to explain, just first of all, explain
what it means.
So I could get a better understanding of why, and then, you know.
Sure. What I would say here is that chastity is the wise use of our sexuality. So a lot of people in this day and age think chastity and abstinence are the same thing. And it's really unfortunate. We kind of live in an age where for a lot of kids, sex education is just don't have sex or you'll get pregnant and you'll die. But when you're married, everything's fine. You know, or like, you know, don't have sex. It's bad, dirty, bad, bad, bad. You're going to be a dirty, awful person. But when you're married, everything's going to be fine. And, you know, and that creates a weird dissonance for people. You know, at the one end, you've been told for years and years and years, don't do something. And then you get married and you're told, yeah, go ahead and do that. That you absolutely should. You're like, well, what changed? Well, I think it's important to understand sex in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's a beautiful thing. It's a great thing. But it's because it's so beautiful and great and powerful, it can be misused. So, I mean, if you think about it, anything that's powerful in life can be misused. I mean, you take fire, for example. Fire is a very powerful thing. I mean, when used properly, fire can, you know, cook food and provide warmth, light, and heat for an entire village, or it can burn the whole village down to the ground. The point is you have to use the fire properly, and if you follow particular rules and principles, you won't get burned by it. But in and of itself is not bad, just only if it's misused. And the same with our sexuality. So since sex is the way of expressing marital love, sex is the way to express a full, free, faithful, total gift of self between a man and woman, then it's not appropriate outside of marriage because you can't express marital love if you're not married to somebody because you can always walk away from them, no strings attached at any time. But within marriage, you can still express inauthentic marital love, that the marital act is a renewal of the original marital vows. So, Christopher, chastity in marriage would involve making sure every time the married couple is intimate, they're always renewing those vows they made. So, for example, they vowed to be faithful. Chastity in marriage would mean adultery is wrong because you must always be faithful every time you're intimate, always with your spouse. It has to be free. So chastity in marriage involves not pressuring, coercing, or worst of all, forcing your spouse to be intimate. That rape is still possible within marriage. So that rape would be a violation of chastity within marriage. And finally, it has to be fruitful, that you're open to life. You're a total gift of yourself, including your fertility. So contraception would be a sin against the chastity of marriage. So that might be a beginning explanation. But so if I had a guideline to it, sex is for expressing the marital vows. So chastity requires us to refrain from sex outside of marriage. And then in marriage, we must always make sure sexual intimacy honestly renews the vows of faithfulness, of freedom, and of fruitfulness. And if you'd like some more information on that, I'd recommend Christopher West talks about this in his book, The Good News About Sex and Marriage. And Ted Sri has a great book called Men, Women, and the Mystery of Love. So those are some resources that may be helpful in that regard. So what do you think of that as kind of an explanation?
Hello? Am I still there?
You're here, Christopher.
You're here.
Oh, okay. I heard a beep. That was great advice. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Christopher. Appreciate the call from Canada. Next, we go to Mark in Chicago. And since you are in Chicago, Mark, let me just say tonight at midnight, there will be a rebroadcast of Catholic Answers Live on 9:50 and 9:30. I think it's 9:30. Yeah, 9:30 and 9:50 a.m. in Chicago. And we are super excited about that because we're now part of the Relevant Radio family. And we are very, very happy to finally be on there in Chicago. Mark, do you have an objection to Catholic moral teaching?
No, not at all. I think, morality is morality, no matter who you are as a human being. But I guess my question that was to the screener was, by the way, I have tremendous respect for all apologetics, even Trent Horn and,
Even
I just want to understand is that in terms of my the relevancy of my question may apply, may not apply, but I was just kind of always curious is that Catholic defense seems to always be we're always kind of it's hearing the Catholicism being defended and explained. Is that always going to be the case as long as we live generations to come, or it just creates more apologetics, or is it just it's just to kind of bring the reformers and the fractured brothers and sisters in Christ back to the church. So I was just wondering that, we can spend eternity writing books and educating that. And I look at the great, wonderful preachers out there, the evangelists out there in the Protestant world, whether it's, not naming any names, but I listen to a few here and there, and I listen to them, and I listen to apologetics, and I listen to, you always have to have your mind open to everything.
Mark, is it fair to say, I'm just sorry to interrupt you, but is it fair to say that your objection is not to Catholic morality, but maybe a slight objection to Catholic apologetics always explaining and defending the faith? Mark, with a yes, I got to let it go to Trent because we're almost at the top of the hour. So, Trent, your response to that.
Yeah, what I would say is that as long as there are souls to evangelize, as long as there are people who need to be taught the Catholic faith or need to be brought into the Catholic faith, the need for apologetics will always arise. Because of sin, people will want to reject the gospel for false teachings and false ideas. So the goal of apologetics is, number one, simply to explain. Sometimes people reject the church because they misunderstand what the church teaches. So simply educating is something we all have to do, especially families with their children, to teach children what the faith is. But also people will have questions or just objections. They'll say, well, I disagree with the church because of this. And that is where the need for a defense will come in. And so as long as we need to evangelize, for some people, just hearing the good news of the gospel, their hearts will be convicted and they'll want to give their lives over to God and receive his grace. But for other people, they may have obstacles and they may have worries and concerns. And so we have to be able to reach out to them to answer their questions and answer their arguments, especially the arguments of those who are firmly opposed to the church and want to actively draw people away from the church. So I think 1 Peter 3:15 sums it up well. Always be ready to give a reason for the hope within, but do so with gentleness and reverence. And I think that's going to apply as long as there are people who are not fully evangelized yet who want those reasons.
Okay, Mark.
Do we evangelize or do we defend the faith?
I see.
Both. Apologetics is a tool. It's like you don't build a house with a hammer, but it's an essential tool. Evangelize means to spread the good news. We spread the good news. When people say, hey, it's too good to be true, then we use apologetics to show why they should believe that the faith is true, good, and beautiful. So it's a part of evangelism, but not identical to it.
Trent Horn, thanks for a great couple hours. Man, you are the hardest working man in apologetics. Come on here and do 2 hours with us. Really appreciate it, Trent. Thanks very much.
Always glad to. Thank you, Si.
Join us tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum, at least for those of you who are getting 2 hours of the broadcast tomorrow. Well, online, we'll always be on 2 hours. You can always get us on Facebook or YouTube or Periscope or at Catholic.com. Open forum, first hour with Patrick Madrid. Second hour, Tim Staples. This is Catholic Answers Live. I'm your host, Si Kellett. Thanks so much for being with us. God willing, we'll be with you again tomorrow. See you then.